It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will. But then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Okay, so now I'm trying something. Oh, good, the thing didn't come up this time. Because we do these so far apart from when we air them and when we record them now, I actually have to listen. I skip through them to figure out what they were about again, so that I know what to name them and what to say in the thing. And what I have discovered is there's almost always a shockingly long pause at the beginning. And my theory is that we hit the record button and it starts recording, but you and I both wait for the stupid message to say, "You may record it," before we speak.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It used to be there was a thing on the screen that I would have to acknowledge, and I would do that first. And but when I'm listening just as an audio product, it's just death for those. I'm like, is something broken? Is my voice? Oh, no, there it is. Like every time. So now I'm going to try. So we'll see if this works.
Okay.
This time around, if I got back on to the right thing. The whole experience may seem very strange to you now and different, because I don't know if you can tell automatically. I am coming to you from Windows 11 now.
Ooh.
Yes.
No, I couldn't tell.
Yeah, no. There's no
reason. Hang on. Sorry.
Are you guys on Windows 11?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I mean,
all right. Yeah, I mean, I am a later one. Like, I didn't, and then I heard that, like, they announced they were going to stop supporting Windows 10, and I was like, well, a lot of people are like, I'm just going to hold on as long as I can, but I'm like, once it is inevitable that I'm going to have to, I might as well get it over with. And there are a lot of annoying things about Windows 11. In general, it seems like a worse product, but that's what Microsoft does. Every three or four iterations of Windows kind of sucks. But also, they were smart enough that with a few settings, I'd basically have turned it back into Windows 10.
Oh.
There's a couple things, but like the things I had other people complaining. They're like, oh, this sucks, and it's like this now or whatever. And I was like, I'll bet there's settings for that. And there are. And so... I just turned off the things I didn't like. But
I mean, I don't even remember like when we got Windows 11. I don't remember.
I would say the single most specific thing that even I haven't turned off exactly is all your shit was on in the corner and now it's in the middle, the bottom.
I mean, maybe.
That's sort of it. I mean, there were other things, like the search bar was always open and all that, and people were like, that's awful, and I'm like, yeah, I bet you can turn that off, and I did. But that is why you and I needed to figure out the volume levels to start with, because I had just about got down to what volume is a good volume for hearing you and everything, but Windows 10 volume range 0 to 50 for some reason. Windows 11 volume range for 0 to 100.
Oh.
So I mean, one could say just double it, but I'm like, I need to gauge. I need to find what the
right number who really is, knows?
So, yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes the OS on your phone will change and you're like, wait a minute, this isn't how this used to work.
Oh, yeah.
And that can be frustrating, but I mean, and also settings on the phone though, right? If you find the right settings, you can put it pretty much back to how it was. But
that's a particularly bad thing for me as a Samsung/Android user. There seems to have been a recent push with some of the major updates to just make it more like an iPhone. And I'm like, there are a variety of reasons I don't have an iPhone, but one of them is I'm not interested in that interface.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, that's it seems like ever since Windows started, and then the competition between Android and iPhone seems to be similar. Apple seems to be ahead, and whatever the other thing is, either Windows or Android, it seems to feel like it's got to keep up or be like.
Well, yeah, just whatever's popular. Everybody's got to try and be like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Or whatever's cheaper, because Samsung has also partnered with Google on a lot of shit now. So now I just, my only option is to use Google's version, and I'm like, but I like Samsung's version.
Yeah, right.
We are, the robot apocalypse has happened, people. We are slaves to the machines. Speaking of which, hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world here to help you embrace our machine overlords and live your best allowable life based on the edicts of our robot overlords. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 741.
You did respond in such a way that made it sound like we had just a hint of like newscaster lag.
Yep.
Like, thank you, Tony. I'm coming to you from
I was gonna wait just a little bit longer to make it seem like we were connected through satellite or something.
No, the truth is actually that for those of you just listening on audio, we're the same dude. It's a voice acting
thing. Tony is the man with a thousand voices. William doesn't even exist.
Yeah.
Anymore.
The greatest trick that I ever pulled was making you think I made a podcast. For those of you just joining me, us, him, for those of you joining one, for the first time here, we have a hat. It is magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And people write into there. Sometimes they tell us who they are. Sometimes they don't. But they write in with whatever the crap they want. Notes, comments, topics, stuff for us to talk about. And the hat, magically, all on its own, no interference from humans or dogs, forwards us the emails and makes us read them and talk about them until we're bored. And that's the show, except most of it's not that. Also, because I keep forgetting to mention, we are now on Blue Sky at magicaltalkinghat.bsky.social. And that's where I'm announcing the episodes now. I am real soon to just getting off of Twitter/X completely forever. But also on Blue Sky, we have literally one follower, and it's a business of a friend of mine, and he doesn't listen to the podcast. He just likes being able to follow somebody. So we may stop advertising. I feel like basically we have the people we have, and they know it's every Thursday. So I don't know how long I'll keep that up. So if you think that's going to matter to your experience, like you're one of those who like, I always forget, but I want to listen, but then the Facebook thing helps remind me or whatever, let me know. And if I don't hear anything eventually, I'm probably going to stop because I'm lazy. Has specified many times, I'm lazy. So how's your week been?
Good. I'd say everything's going really well. We saw The Gorge last night.
Oh.
Yeah, I didn't like
it. What did you think? We were a fairly divided household on
that. Yeah, I didn't like it. Just plain didn't like it. Like there wasn't anything I liked about it.
I absolutely understand why someone would not like it. and I don't think it's great.
No, I think you said it was a Red Notice. That's the thing we say now.
Oh, definitely.
And it was definitely that. Yeah. That.
And honestly, I personally think the best part of it was the romance. And that's not something I say very often. It just hit right for me. And you don't like that stuff at all. I usually don't either. The mystery was really interesting until we resolved the mystery, and then it wasn't very interesting. And then the final action set pieces, I was already basically done watching the movie at that point.
Yeah.
But the banter and the interactions early on, I don't know. They worked for me. I am an ever growing appreciation of Anya Taylor-Joy. I am not in general a Miles Teller fan. They are both great actors. I just don't necessarily like them. You know, as people, they're horrible. No, I mean, their performances don't always do it for me. But yeah, no, I'm like, I get it instantly. I'm like, yeah, no. And I would even be like, yours is probably the closer to a universal. It, like, I think yours is closer to objectivity, as it were.
Yeah, I mean,
it's not a good movie, but a fun time.
Well, oh, but see, that's what the Red Notice things are like. They're like, okay, yes, I know what this is, and either I'm gonna think it's still fun or not. Because it can still be fun, right? Like, oh, this is a Red Notice, but I like these actors, or I think they've got some clever stuff going on. It's fun. If you can find something fun about it, it's okay. It's just, it's not like you're paying a lot of money at the theater to watch it or whatever.
Yeah.
Or not. And it's a really weird thing.
Perhaps some of it also is minimal lore. There is some, but it's not complicated, which means my brain is not like, wait a second, what's wrong with this? Which my brain does. And any Red Notice that tries to get deep in the weeds on their plot fails, because no Red Notice has. If you had a good script, it wouldn't be a Red Notice.
Correct.
But this one had minimal. Like, we just had enough to make it interesting. Again, the downside being we had the mystery and it was the most pedestrian solution ever, that I think I literally had played 5 video games with that same story like the week before. Like, it's a very generic sort of solution to the mystery. It was old man Wiggins in a mask, and he was just trying to get the insurance money for the gorge. But because of those meddling kids, it's all about that.
I realized after watching it, though, I was thinking about, you know, because, you know, like, you know, there's a romance in it, and it worked for you. It almost never works for me, and this one didn't work for
me. It usually doesn't for me. I'm surprised. But.
Well, I kind of reflected on what is it about this kind of thing, and what I realized was, for a lot of romances, not all of them, by the way. A tiny number, this isn't true, but for the vast majority of it is true. I find romances make me like the characters less. Like, something about how they're acting is like, yeah, this doesn't, I like this person less now, because for a lot of times it's like in a heterosexual romance, like, what I'm sure the actor and the director and everything thinks they're conveying about the guy is he's being charming or whatever, but to me, he's being completely creepy, right?
You exactly, know what I mean? Exactly. Yeah.
And
the romance has to be believable and somewhat organic to the situation.
Which it almost never is. I mean,
no. It only works if they have good chemistry, because otherwise it's not believable that they would get together.
Sure. But even chemistry sometimes can't overcome it, because observation is that, okay. So it's not just about romance. There's other things in stories like action scenes. A lot of times that's when I'm going to go get a drink. I just don't care about an action scene. And it's really the same kind of thing between a romance and action scene or other things. It's like, The more fantastical the thing gets in the story, the more unbelievably fantastical it gets, the more I am disconnected from it. I get it. It pulls me out of it. And my observation is, most romances, whether it's the main thing of the story, like it's the it is a romance, or it's a subplot, it's fantastical, right? Like, nobody. What I mean by that is, if someone was seeing a romance like this play out in front of them, they'd roll their eyes, look at their friend, and say, "I give this about a year." You know, this isn't how relationships actually work. It's not even aspirational. It's just fantastical. Now, people like fantastical things, and that's fine. But most people don't confuse, you know, fantasy and reality, right? Like, the vast majority of people can enjoy a fantasy and like really get into it, but they don't, they know it's not real. And I'm no different. I also know it's not real, but for me, the unreality of it is not entertaining. And I just, but it wait, just takes me out of it.
And, but this only applies to romance?
No, it applies to, nope. That's why I brought up action. It, whatever right. it is, I'm out of it as soon as it gets, you know, fantastical. And the appeal to the audience is, hey, we know this is kind of ridiculous and fantastical, but we know you like that kind of thing, so we're going to give some of that to you. And the most people in the audience are like, yes, I do want this fantasy of how relationships work or how action works or how the job of being a doctor works, because that's another thing they typically get wrong. But for me, it's like, nope. I'm not interested in that fantastical thing. And so I get popped out of it.
All right. I mean, massive gorge sized disconnect here that I hope you can see coming.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I probably.
You watch a lot of superhero movies.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That are, by definition, the most fantastical things.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Like they are a genre of movie whose whole reason for existing is to be fantastical.
Well, I would argue it's not just movies. Like, I enjoy stories, comic book stories, but not just comic book stories, like myths and legends and other things that pretty much fall in the same thing. Yes, you're right. I do.
So speak to this.
Well,
you just explained to me how you hate that shit. And yet you also eat that shit up on a regular basis, more than most other genres.
Well, but I mean, I've talked about this before, the whole, you know, I was not a fiction person. And I guess I still don't think I am very much of a fiction person. However, there are things that are kind of, for me, since I was young, kind of on the bubble, so to speak. In other words, things that are where I can connect to the metaphor of it, which is, that's how a lot of people enjoy fantastical things. It's not just something they connect to directly. But even today, if I'm going to enjoy a thing that's fantastical, if I'm not going to be popped out of it, even if it's a romance or an action thing, maybe sometimes I can get into it, but the way that I do is I can see the metaphor of it. I can see the,
okay.
I can see its connection to it's, there's a message, there's a broader thing besides just the thing itself. And for any hero narrative and you know, the superhero stories are
a superhero movie is generally essentially a myth.
Yeah. Told in a different hero's way. Journey, yeah. Whatever. I can appreciate that part of it. So, and that's always been the way I can plug into any fiction is, well, if I get the metaphor of it, if I can see that it's a, for me, it has to be a fiction that serves a nonfiction purpose. So it has to have a meaning. It has to have a point. And I think for a lot of people, that's true. I don't think I'm the only one for whom that's true, but for me, it's like super duper duper true. And for me, when I can think of it, when I can connect to it in that hero's journey morality play kind of way, then yeah, I'm not popped out of it.
This is, I don't remember us ever having discussed this, at least not in the specifics. And this is very enlightening, and it explains a lot of confusing things I've had, because you and I are both very into understanding continuity and that kind of shit. And yet you very much enjoy a lot of things that I can't, because of that exact thing. And this explains it finally. Like this explains how you and I can be so much on the same page of how narrative should work and everything, and yet you fucking like Batman. Like, now I get it.
Well,
now
right, I but remember, I've probably read more nonfiction about Batman than I've read actual Batman. I mean, I have books.
That just makes you really weird. But also, remember, like, I'm hanging in your house seeing what your Batman books are?
Well, I just talked about it. I've just talked about it. That's all.
No, just, I don't, if you had asked me, what do you think the ratio of nonfiction Batman stuff to fictional Batman stuff is for me? I'd be like, what are you talking about? He's not real. It's never been real. Although I did recently learn that Seal and Bruce Wayne canonically have the same birth date. I don't think the same year, but the same day. And I don't know what the date is. Sorry. But apparently they do.
So, yeah, I mean, because that's a big, that is important because you said it, I like Batman.
Yeah. Like, I feel like in my interactions with your mind, a large door has just rolled aside. And I'm like,
I mean, if
the feng shui makes way more sense now.
If a person, it's critical to my enjoyment of Batman that someone, that he's the kind of character or an image in pop culture that a person can write a compelling nonfiction book about. If that weren't true, I probably wouldn't be interested in him because there probably wouldn't be anything interesting about him to me. Mm. But all the interesting things about him to me are the same things that would motivate a philosopher or a social scientist or someone to write a nonfiction book about him. Yep. That's why I like him too. If he didn't have those interesting things, I wouldn't.
How much nonfiction have you read about Black Adam?
I don't think any. I don't think he's been mentioned
in anything. I was being hilarious.
That's a serious question.
That movie sucked, and we both knew that movie sucked. We both agreed. Like, you like a lot of superhero movies.
Yeah, it was awful.
But that movie sucked.
But I was
recently reminded of it. One of the supporting characters really injured themselves horribly on that movie.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And then all they got out of it was Black Adam. I just watched a list earlier today of actors who ruined their bodies for ultimately terrible movies.
But like, Black Adam didn't have to be terrible. And this movie, Gorge, didn't have to be bad. It could have been good. I mean, that's why we watched it, because we thought, well, I mean, it's, yeah, this could be okay. But it wasn't. But here's the thing. So getting back to where we were talking about before, when there's a romance in a movie, there's almost no, it's just, that's what it is. There's no metaphor. It's never important to the plot. I mean, to other people, it's like, we're getting to know these people character wise. Right. And it's making us care about them more. It doesn't make me care about them more. It makes me care about them less. So
I'm very character motivated. If you have characters that I care about, I will probably like your movie.
Sure.
But it's a very hard thing to get me to care about your characters.
Yeah. Yeah. But does the romance help you care about them ever? Cause it doesn't.
I mean, in the case of The Gorge, it did.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I wouldn't have enjoyed that movie in the slightest if that romance had been less realistic and felt less real to me.
Mm.
They have to feel real. I have to be like, I could see two people. I could see those two people in real life getting together. And that's why I say chemistry. It's if people start talking and it's well written and they've got good chemistry, I'm like, yeah, these people are hitting it off. I ship them, as it were. And The Gorge had nothing else going for it. Just there. And I show up and I'm like, it's Miles Teller and it's Taylor Joy. And I'm like, and they're going to fall in love. And I was prepared just to hate that part. But I was like, no, it's kind of fun. And we didn't have to do the bullshit where they hate each other first.
Right. That's
like,
true.
That's, I'm not saying it never happens, but it's such a cliche. And most of the time, if you hate each other to start with, for a variety of reasons, you will not end up together.
You know, that's a good point. I mean, thinking back to
it. For no other reason, then you won't make any attempt to learn otherwise than hating them if you start by hating them.
Yeah. If you take the Gorge part out of it and you just imagine them, the whole thing happening, except they met at a party or something. It actually seemed pretty realistic for two people who are into each other right away. I mean, I'll give it that. It does work
for me. It very seldom does it. And I now that we're sort of rehashing this, I think the fact that they had the right chemistry and it was written, I mean, don't get me wrong, it was a fast romance, but it was quite believable, especially in that sort of isolated situation.
Mm-hmm,
I believed it and I cared about it. And that's probably the only reason I even liked it. And I want to be clear. The Gorge is not a good movie.
No.
But I was okay with it.
But don't you think it could have been, like, don't you think it had some really interesting fundamentals?
I wouldn't have watched it if I didn't think it could have been. I will not watch a Red Notice. I don't put on a movie while I'm doing the laundry.
Right.
I won't watch a Red Notice most of the time. And the only times I do are like, ooh, this they could have gotten something here. And every once in a while they do, but not very often.
What do you think it needed? Like, since we watched it, I've been thinking, well, one thing they needed maybe was to like a streaming series, an eight episode, eight might have been too many, but like to me, a lot of its weakness was in not having time to develop certain things and having to rush, you know, an exposition
I
or
could see
something.
that. I mean, ultimately, the problem with every red nose, red nose, red, the problem with every red nose is alcoholism. No, the problem with every red notice is better story, better slash believable story. Because they get huge name, they don't get bad actors per se. They at minimum get Hollywood A-listers who are competent. And if you had a decent story that made sense, I'd be fine. And every
Well,
once in a
but
while, you do. Honestly, this is the same problem I have with most Disney movies, is if you had a decent story and it made sense, I might like your film.
Like so if they had more time and it were longer and they developed Sigourney Weaver's character some more, which means giving her more screen time, which means cutting away and revealing more about that side of the story, I think the pacing would have been better. I think you wouldn't
Yeah,
have had
but
to
they
do
would
so much
have to
exposition.
overhaul it because what little we got of Sigourney Weaver didn't really hold together consistently by itself. She was clearly the bad guy, but like her motivations and actions were confusing and sometimes conflicting, and she was like really smart except when she was really dumb and
Well, this is what I'm saying. If that whole part had been developed better, and you would have the other characters would have had to do a lot less awkward exposition.
yeah. But we're saying the same thing. I'm saying it needs better writing and a better story. You're getting into the specifics of the aspects that could be better. But we're saying the same thing.
No, I.
If you have a good writer, it becomes a real movie. If you don't have a writer, which is the case here, it becomes a red nose. And by don't have a writer, I mean you have a shitty writer and or an AI, or
Well,
plagiarist.
I guess in my head, I'm thinking not so much that it needs a better story, but it needs more of the story it had. But that's like you said, that's a better story. I mean, that is what that is.
I mean, it would need to change some shit too, in my opinion, from the existing story. Because again, I don't think it's particularly interesting or original.
That's well, you're
Like,
right about that. The plot
it was,
wise.
I mean, there's a lot of things where, like, the mystery, like, there's the J.J. Abrams thing, like, the mystery is more than what it could ever be. But this one, I was just like, huh, really? Like, you could have straight up been like, you could have come up with the most crazy shit. And I would have been like, well, this is interesting. It's dumb, but it's interesting. But in this case, I was like, this is the most generic. I mean, no spoilers, I guess, but like, but
Cliche.
okay, let's fuck it. We'll do spoilers. The Gorge to Hell was just a place where during World War II they did experiments and now there's fucked up shit. Ooh, World War II experiments. That made weird things that we thought might be supernatural, but they're not. We just fucked them up with weird experiments. Never heard that before. I mean, that's almost literally a subgenre at this point of film. Like if it had literally been like, yeah, one time Satan was here and he took a piss on this tree and now it's an evil tree and the whole gorge is haunted, way better. Dumb as hell would have had way more fun with it. But no, they did experiments, and their answer, and the whole way the system, and they've spent 60 years with this elaborate secret, billions and billions of dollars, kind of off the cuff defensive system where the two sides of the gorge do it their own way and don't really communicate with each other, because this was the best answer to get rid of this shit. Not nuke it. Not like, and we talk about, oh, they survived so many things. This is still not the best answer.
Well, they did have a
Chain
rationale.
guns with two people who are not allowed to talk to each other is not.
Their justification for why the whole thing still existed was because they were still using it. They were still doing the research, remember? And it was a cliche
Yes.
reason for them to keep doing it.
And it again doesn't work because you have two massive.
No. Yeah,
it's a Cold War thing.
Yes.
Like the two sides of the gorge are like it's a Berlin Wall.
Yeah.
Which is the worst way to handle this shit. Like, no, it doesn't hold together and it's dumb. So let's not talk. We've spent almost half an episode talking about the gorge. Never deserved that. Let's do anything else.
All right. Well, how was your week? How was your week?
It was okay. Still playing more Expedition 33. Such a good game. It's still very sad and it catches me. And sometimes I have to take breaks because it gets real sad again. But sometimes it's real fun. They've created these little goofy, a species of these sort of goofy characters, and they have like nonsense speak, but they have lots of fun lines that they say, and they crack me up a lot. And sometimes just weird shit. I was going through the village where they all live recently because I was like, oh, I got this, and now I can go buy this, but I couldn't remember. It's not laid out super well. None of the stages have mini maps, and so it can get very confusing. But so I'm going around and I see this one guy and he's standing in his house and it's on fire. And I'm like, how did I miss him before? And I go over and he's just standing in the house. And his whole thing, he's there, there, there. And this caption just said, this is fine.
I like that. Yeah, that's good. This is fine.
And they're all obsessed with fighting. That's like their whole deal. But like they're also adorable. And like the little kids ones are obsessed with. So there's like they're like threatening the old ones. And they're like, I'll break your kneecaps. And the other one's like, oh, wait. I didn't sign up for kneecap breaking. And the other one's like, don't worry, I brought spare kneecaps. And like, yay. But all kneecaps. This is all the subtitles. And meanwhile, it's this vaguely French little goofy going on at the same time. One where they're reading palms to one is like, would you like your palm read? Yes, please. I see you will have a life of fighting. Hooray! And every time you go back, they say this. It's just goofy, and there's just fun stuff like that. But then also post-apocalyptic, people die. It's terrible. So but it's not. It doesn't feel, it's heavy. It doesn't feel forced. It's not a bummer game as I would say it. It's a very sad game, but it's like believable, sad and earned, and while still being very fantastical. Like you can be like, I'm not going around like this could fucking happen. Cause I hate when it's shit that can fucking actually happen.
Yeah. Right.
But I'm like this, no, we're fine, but it is still very sad. So yeah, I've been playing some of that. I think I might do Doom the Dark Ages because that popped up on Game Pass, and it's people are like, wow, this is way easier than most other Doom games. And I'm like, well, I've never played Doom games specifically because I thought they would be too hard for me.
Yeah.
So maybe this is good for me. So I mean I might as well check it out. We are watching a new show. We're finishing the last season of Everywhere, or sorry, Somebody Somewhere. But I picked a new show. We are watching Interior Chinatown, which is on Hulu. We kind of knew about it and then forgot about it and then knew about it and forgot about it. It is the Reservation Dogs format. A minority writer / filmmaker, Taika Waititi, came in and executive produced for him to make a TV show. Very much like happened with Reservation Dogs, except this is a obviously Chinese creator. But he's pretty involved. Like the first episode we watched, Taika Waititi actually directed. I don't know how much more he'll direct. But it's the main character is played by Jimmy O. Yang, who is a Hong Kong-born American comedian who we've encountered in a couple places. If you watch Space Force, he was in that and a couple other things, but we like him. He's also done some stand-up, but we like him. And the basic premise is he is a bit character in basically a Law and Order TV show, but like doesn't know that. Like, it's extremely meta. It's a show and things are happening, but every once in a while we pull back and it's like on a TV, or every once in a while there'll be like narration that like advertises a product placement that's in it or whatever. And so it's very surreal in that way, but the idea is basically him deciding he's going to, there's a crime thing happening in Chinatown, and a secret police officer like wants him to help out. And so he's decided he's not going to.
So interior Chinatown, that's a script direction.
Or essentially. Yeah.
Screenplay.
But it's like, it's very a Law and Order. Like, I believe their TV show is called Black and White. And there's even like two cops who are like the glamorous ones who show up. And literally when they walk in the room, like all the lights go out and a spot comes in or whatever. And they sound like the cops out or whatever. But then they leave not having really done anything. And so then they have to figure it out. And there is it's an action comedy in that there is martial arts stuff going on. And that's a thing. The main character's dad was a kung fu teacher. And although he was never his best student, his missing brother was the really good student. And he's not as good, but he always prepares. And his friend, who's played by Ronnie Chang, which I love Ronnie Chang, is like, why do you keep up with this? He's like, we live in Chinatown. Kung Fu could break out at any moment. And it sounds silly, but later in the episode, Kung Fu kind of breaks out. And it's a pretty fun scene. And it's like, kind of a cool action scene, but also kind of realistic, because like he's not as good as somebody, and like he seems to do really well, and then he gets, you know, multiple guys on him and he can't stand up. Like, it's not ridiculous, and like Ronnie Chang doesn't know kung fu, but he's like trying to fight and all this stuff. Like, but it, I don't know, it's fun and it's very different, so I'm very excited for it. And it's again, it's got that Taika Waititi thing. Like, he knows what's funny and entertaining, and the best way to do it is to have him just sprinkle his magic dust over your creation. And he's so good at letting them speak to themselves, as was obvious in Reservation Dogs. Reservation Dogs, I am confident, benefited so much, not just financially, from Taika Waititi's involvement. I am not surprised he was involved. It doesn't feel like a Taika Waititi joint. And that's how you want it. And this is the same thing. This feels really cool. And I can see how he's involved. And I can tell, I'm not surprised he directed it. It doesn't, it's not just Taika Waititi, but now we're Chinese. Like, it's its own thing, which I like. I think he's being very good at paying things forward. And I like that. So yeah, we're watching that. Four movies to talk about. I gotta hurry. We have a very common procedure that happens in our house in the evenings. Okay. Most evenings, if it's not a date night or D&D night or something like that, on a normal sort of work night, I go get Trish, come home, I have made / do make dinner, and then bring it to her, and then we watch TV. Mm-hmm. Usually our shows. Sometimes if we're like in a mood, like, let's not watch it, let's watch a movie, something like that. Mm-hmm. At 9 o'clock, I tuck Trish into bed. And then a couple hours later, I put that. And it's sort of us just both winding down, because she's in bed on her iPad and she's watching movies or videos or whatever. And I'm out here, the TV, watching movies or videos or whatever. But that's sort of our little wind down time. There's a point before tuck in generally where I'm like, okay, what do you want to do next? And she's like, we're done. And she's just here and she plays on her phone. And I watch whatever I want. Sometimes I'll watch things where I'm like, she doesn't actively want to watch this, but I think she might enjoy having it on in the room. So like, they're like Taskmaster. She's not actively watching Taskmaster, but if there's a new episode and I haven't seen it and she's like, we're done, and there's enough time, I'll be like, I'll play it now. And she'll sometimes get involved. And it's usually, it can be as early as 6:30. It can be as late as sort of 8. It varies. But there's sort of a vibe. There's a pattern. And I can tell, like, when I say what's next, it's likely she's going to say. So. And the other night, it was only about 7. But I was like, you know, we watched our shows. We don't really have anything. We're winding down. She's probably going to say no. So I was like, what should we do next? We had just watched, because sometimes she sort of just wants a little thing. So I was like, what do you want to do next? And she's like, I want to see that one comedian talk about the orcas attacking the yachts. Because I don't know if you know about this, but there's been a rash of pods of orcas capsizing and attacking only yachts, not other ships, just yachts. And Trish is super here for it. She thinks the orcas are revolting against the rich, and she loves it. And a lot of people do. So she's really into this idea. So she's like, this one comedian had a thing. Let's watch this. So we watch this little thing, whatever. And I'm like, okay, what do you want to do now? Fully expecting her to say no. And I'm already thinking, like, maybe I'll play my game or whatever else. And what comes out of her mouth is, you want to watch Orca? And I was like, the Jaws knockoff? And she's like, yeah, I hear it's terrible. I'm such a creature of habit. Like, this absolutely, I was like, I wanted to just be like, no, this is not how it's supposed to work. We're not supposed to start a movie this late, let alone one we haven't even talked about that we know to be bad. And none of us are high, for the record. We're all sober here. It's weeknight. But I have no reason not to. And so I was like, okay. So we fucking watched Orca.
Oh. How was it?
Orca sucks. say it's one of the better Jaws knockoffs.
I don't think I've even ever heard of it.
It's one of the first. I think Piranha is the real well-known one, but it's one of the early. It stars Charlotte Rampling, which I'm like, that's a pretty good get, but she's been in some shitty movies. And I can't remember the name again, but the first Dumbledore.
Oh yeah.
Who's dead now? He's the leading man in this. He doesn't look anything like you think he does. He's an Irish dude for starters, and he has like blonde locks, and it's weird, but they are the two main characters in this movie. And there is a young woman who plays almost no part in it. She basically has like one line, and then later we open a door and see her in bed with a guy, although it's the movie's PG, so it's not a thing, but like we get that they're together now. And then later she gets her leg bit off, and that's pretty much the entire run of that character, with fucking Bo Derek. Like, I think like 2 years before 10 happened that made her super famous. So that was weird. But it mostly takes itself super seriously and gets like deeply philosophical about things and stuff in a way that just doesn't work. It says a lot of facts about orcas that I'm like, I'm confident some of these can't be true. And in fact, some of these things are just literally not facts. They are not things that science could prove. I don't know why you're saying them like they have been proven. But mostly it does what I assume the fourth Jaws does. I have not ever watched the fourth Jaws, but as I understand it, it makes this one orca into a super genius. This orca figures out that if it goes to this one spot near this town and flops on some water pipes that then start leaking water, and then goes and bumps a cabin that has a lit lantern in it, the town will explode. Because that's what happens. It literally causes a series of events, and then the fuel depot explodes, and the whole town catches fire. The whole point is like, oh, they're so smart. They're up, like, this is too much involves, like, understanding of social customs, and like, it's just not. Also, it's one of those where like the orca, nobody looks good from a moral perspective. Really terrible. Why am I worried about orca spoilers? They were trying to capture an orca to sell to an aquarium, and in the process they ended up accidentally really hurting the orca and causing it to miscarry on the boat while it's hanging. We actually earlier got a slideshow where we saw what a little baby orca looks like, just so we would recognize the thing that slipped out of this orca, I think. And then the husband was just hanging out. The husband orca was just hanging out in the water watching, being real pissed off. And so eventually they put the mama back, but the mama died from her injuries. And that's when dad orca was like, fuck you. But specifically, fuck you, Dumbledore. Like, I know it was you because you were the captain of that boat.
Richard there were Harris. Like
7 people involved, but I know you were the captain. Yeah. So I'm coming after you. But in the process, I will eat everyone you care about.
Yeah, Richard Harris is who you're talking about. But he was a big star back then. So
oh yeah, no, he was huge. He was huge.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's terrible because it digs itself. I think if you got drunk or high with some friends and watched it, it might be fun. But it's shockingly bad just because it takes itself super serious.
Now I recall back then there being a lot of that was a period of a lot where there was a lot of speculation about how intelligent whales and dolphins might actually be.
Yeah.
And I think there were a lot of stories that did what you're talking about, where they said, well, what if they have like a human level intelligence that they can figure stuff out? Wouldn't that be amazing? And see, a lot of stories like that.
The way I want that to be is Deep Blue Sea, which I also haven't seen, but I intend to, because it is a movie about where scientists were like, what if we made sharks smarter and more aggressive? Oh, no. Look what's happened. They're smarter and more aggressive now. And that's a much worse story, but way more of an entertaining movie in my book.
Gain of function research on sharks.
Well, and. What I love is the lady who did this in the movie is one of the main characters. And in the original cut, she's the survivor.
Mm.
And audiences were like, no, fuck that lady. And so they changed the ending to kill her off because audiences were like, this is all her goddamn fault. She does not get to be the one who survives. So they literally shot it to kill her because all the audience was so mad. And I'm like, yes, power to the people. All right. So yeah, Orca's terrible. And I don't know why we watched it, but it was there. Rezball. We need to talk about Rezball. We don't have to talk for very long, though. Rezball is on Netflix. R-E-Z ball. 2 words. It is partially the work of the main person in Reservation Dogs, who's not Taika Waititi. I'm very embarrassed to have not learned their name, but the person who essentially is the creator of Reservation Dogs also created this movie, and a couple of actors from it show up. Not big names, but a couple show up in here. It's a good movie. Here's what it is. It's a sports movie. And this particular version is reservation and native based. So it's what if a tribal school did a Hoosiers? What if a tribal school did a Remember the Titans or a Drumline or a Bring It? Or like it's, you know, there's a team and we're not necessarily working good and we want to make the playoffs and then things happen. And then and in the process, we learn about some people have family troubles and da, 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 da. And we do spend a lot of time with the realities of living on the reservation and what that means and some serious shit about, you know, rates, the increased rates, the suicide and like drug abuse rates on reservations are insane. And we deal with that stuff and what it'd be like to grow up in that. But it's a Hoosiers. It's a sports movie. And it's everybody should get theirs. And it's great. This is wonderful that it exists and they did it really well. And everybody should have that representationally. And I understand that these are popular and pretty good kind of genre. Super not my thing. I've seen some. I haven't even seen Hoosiers, but I mean, I've seen Remember the Titans. It's like I get it. I don't. It's sports. I don't care. It's fine. There's nothing wrong. I don't care. So It's no Reservation Dog. It was fun. I mean, I liked it. I laughed sometimes. It's not a comedy particularly, but it's, you know, the characters were believable. I had a good time with it, and it's good to see that representation. But it's a Remember the Titans. So, just keep that in mind. So it's not just one of those where, like, if you liked Reservation Dogs, you'll like this. It's a different thing, but it's in that vein. The other night, I've been meaning to watch this for a while, and I never watched. You ever watched The Frighteners?
I think I did. Yeah, it's a long time ago.
I was going to say Alex P. Keaton, Michael J. Fox.
Yeah.
Co-written and directed by Peter Jackson.
Mm-hmm. Peter Jackson.
At this time, Peter Jackson was a New Zealand filmmaker who mostly had made really gross out, edgy, gory, fucked up horror comedies that are like Bad Taste, and there was another one, Dead Alive, maybe, I don't know, that are cult films that people like. I don't, in general, Oceania, like New Zealand and Australian based horror, is a style that doesn't do it for me, in the same way that J horror kind of doesn't work for me either. It can be done, and I have seen some great films, horror films done from Australia, New Zealand stuff, but in general, that's their style of horror doesn't do it for me, and I don't like the earlier Peter Jackson. And then he did the movie Heavenly Creatures,
mm-hmm.
which is an amazing movie that I'm not sure I recommend, because it is rough, because it is based on the true story of two teenage New Zealand girls who were sort of, it was them against the world thing, and in their friendship and in their worry that the world was going to mess them up, they together conspired to murder one of their moms who they felt was standing in their way. And it's an insane story, and it's so tragic, but the film is the story that the murders at the end, and we lead up to their relationship and what it means to them and their life. And it is an amazing film. And it is also Kate. Oh, it's one of the Kates. It's not Beckinsale. Is
Winslet,
it?
I want to say.
Winslet. Kate Winslet.
Yeah.
In at least her first role that internationally anybody knew her in. And she's phenomenal. And the other actor who has been in less since then, but some, also phenomenal. It's a brilliant movie, and I watched it in a time of my life where I could watch that kind of thing. I could not watch that thing. It is one of the more horrific killing scenes I've ever seen, because it involves it is a poorly executed murder, because it's teenage girls who don't know what they're doing, and it's done realistically in a way that just made me shockingly uncomfortable, even when I first saw it.
I mean, I'd say that's the film that put Peter Jackson on the map for anyone other than a horror person.
Exactly. And outside of New Zealand, really.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so everybody's like, oh, here's an up-and-coming guy. All right, you want to make a Hollywood movie? And he's like, yeah, I want to make a horror comedy. and I have this special effects workshop. We're kind of new, but we're pretty good.
Yeah, Weta, I think it was Weta.
So can I use them? And they were like, sure. And so he made The Frighteners.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it did well.
I don't recall it doing well, no. It's this was one also, of those that Michael J. Fox hadn't really done a lot of film.
This was post Back to the Future. This is 96. Okay. I mean, he's out there.
But
I'm guessing if he hadn't been there, it wouldn't have been made.
But this was an adult role, right? Like, even though he was an adult, this was an adult role.
This is an R-rated film.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I don't think he'd done that before.
And it is the story. Michael J. Fox is a man who can see and talk to and interact with ghosts. And he uses this ability to make his ghost friends go and haunt people. And then he shows up and exorcises the ghosts for a hefty fee. He is a psychic investigator.
Yeah.
And he's scamming. And then weird actual ghost shit starts to happen. Trish enjoyed it. I think there's a different movie here that, like, if this was a PG or PG-13 film, and to be honest, the R stuff is minimal and very easily excised and mostly involves the comedy aspects and aren't funny.
Mm-hmm.
If you wanted to see John Astin playing a ghost cowboy crawling inside a sarcophagus so he can fuck the corpse of a mummy and talk about it a lot and see his ghost butt like come out as he thrusts, this is the movie for you. And it definitely had to be R-rated for that. But I feel like we could have gotten rid of that. because outside of that, Trish said it best, I think. She said, this feels like kind of what I thought the new Haunted Mansion Disney movie was gonna be. And I think that's there. I hated it thoroughly.
Oh, you hated
the,
it? Okay.
The action sequences are fun, but every aspect of the story is at best wholly unrealistic and at worst disconcertingly offensive, in my opinion.
Oh.
There's just gross people. The people that are supposed to be the good guys are not very good. It's the female lead who I'm sorry, I never encountered her before. I have to refer to her as not Andy McDowell because she's so almost Andy McDowell. Like, I guarantee you they want Andy McDowell for this role. She very quickly, I don't want to say falls in love with Michael J. Fox, but she just becomes really obsessed with him really quick and like wanting to help him and save him when he does not want to be helped or saved. And she's just really focused on it in a way that makes zero sense. So when they end up together, spoilers, it makes zero sense. Michael J. Fox's character is pretty shitty. There's reasons for it, but he's pretty shitty. And his change in character doesn't make a lot of sense. Jeffrey Combs plays the worst thing I've ever seen him play. It is just an awful, gross, stupid character that looks dumb and sounds awful and does crazy, terrible shit for no reason. And I think you could argue is very coded as neuroatypical in a very negative light. It's just the worst. And I love Jeffrey Combs. And he deserves better than this. Everybody's in this movie, though, if you're going for old horror thing. Like I said, John Astin is in this. Jake Busey is in this. I always love seeing a good Jake. I always love seeing a good Busey, let's be honest. Dee Wallace is in this, and she's not playing anybody's mom. It's that was shock. Dee Wallace has been around forever. I recently saw her in a real low budget thing where she showed up and was like an exorcist or something for like one scene. But she's a mainstay of B horror movies forever, but she's always somebody's mom because she has that look and she's of that age. In this one, she got to be somebody's daughter, admittedly an old lady's daughter, but still. But Trish thought it was okay. Like it's like when you and I talk and she's like, I agree with your criticisms. I just didn't care. And the fun parts were fun. And there were fun parts.
Yeah.
So I really didn't like it. She thought it was okay. We both agreed it's not great, but kind of a fun sort of artifact of the past. All right, one more to talk about. We're not gonna get to an email. I feel bad we have emails, but I don't know. We don't manage our time well here at the Magic Talking Hat podcast. We finally spent $10 so that we could rent Mickey 17.
Oh,
because really wanted to see Mickey 17.
Okay.
It looked very interesting as Bong Joon-ho, who I'm not sure I like most Bong Joon-ho movies. I think he's a very good director. I don't know that the movies are for me, and I'm starting to sort of learn that.
Oh.
And he's upcomer, and he does some amazing stuff. And he has different stuff, and I like that. You can't fault Snowpiercer for not being original.
Mm.
Say whatever else. And I know it had source material. But my point is, for good or for bad, just making that film was a big swing.
Mm.
And I appreciate that, even if it super did not work for me.
Yeah, yeah. I can appreciate that too.
And this is a similar thing, like the premise. Well, for Robert Pattinson, I'm really starting to become a fan of his, both because I think he's quite a good and diverse. He's a good character actor, and he really seems very deliberate in what he chooses to be in post Twilight, you know. Mm. And I want to see more of him. I like him, and so him being in something nowadays, I'm like. Him being in something and it's clearly not he's the romantic lead or whatever. Like I didn't see Water for Elephants or whatever that bullshit was, or you know. But in general, if he's doing a real acting thing, and in this one it's a sci-fi thing in which he is helping colonize a new planet and he is the one expendable. Basically, in the future they invented technology where they could just make a new body and download all your memories into it. And everybody freaked out ethically. They're like, what does this mean? We can't do this. This is awful. And the weird compromise they came up with is they're like, we'll have one dude. And he does all the shit and dangerous jobs. And whenever he dies, we reprint him. But he is the only one. Nobody else gets to use this technology. But we have one, you know, sort of sacrificial expendable. And he, desperate to get off planet for reasons, signs up for this experiment. And when we start the film, this is the 17th clone. And we learn that his life is really bad because mostly they use him for things that they're like, well, that would kill somebody to do, but we need it done. Or a lot of experiments and things. Like they get to the new planet and there's a virus. And so he gets to be the guinea pig for literally every treatment. And so he dies horribly over and over again as they're like, well, that antivirus didn't work. Let's try it. Like he's because he can just come back and everybody starts to see it. Like everybody else is like, what's the big deal? He'll just come back. And, but they're also all like, what's the reoccurring thing that I found a little annoying is this happens in other versions of this. Everybody wants to know what it's like to die. And he hates being asked that question. But everybody asks it all the time. And I'm like, on the surface thought, that makes sense. I don't think that would be my big thing. If somebody was like that, I don't think, like, I imagine, I don't know. He's not going into the great beyond or anything. So it's probably just, it hurts, and then you don't know what's going on, and you wake up again, right? Like, and for the record, this movie doesn't have some sort of liminal space in between incarnations or whatever.
Oh.
So well, I'm just like, death doesn't sound that interesting in this kind of context. Like, I wouldn't ask Deadpool either. Like it probably hurts, and then eventually he rests and gets better. Like
I'm a little confused as to, so you're saying they take his memories and they download it into the
yes.
Okay, but when's the last moment they capture the memories? Like right, when does that happen?
This is an extremely important question in this kind of sci-fi context that is not new. This movie did not invent this kind of cloning thing or whatever. And it's an extremely important question that has huge impacts on whatever story you are kind of trying to tell. And in some cases, literally that gap is the entire point of the story.
Many times, yeah.
Yes. They don't really deal with it here. Like, it at its heart, it appears that it's like somehow they can do it up to the second, even though the way the technology works, I wouldn't think they'd be able to do that. But we kind of hand wave that. But then there are times where it seems like there are gaps, or they talk about how occasionally there are, but it never comes up to anything, which this is starting to be my issues with the movie. The crux of the plot line is Mickey 17 is left to what they assume is his absolute death. And instead he doesn't die and makes his way back, but by then they've already made a new one. And that's against the rules. Hardcore. In the event of multiples, everyone has, all of them have to be completely killed forever. because that's, I don't know, defying God's plan. Part of the thing is this colony is at least partially funded slash led by the church, because they want to go off and make a perfect world thing. But the actual main guy running it is a failed congressman who is fleeing the planet basically so he can be top dog again somewhere else, played by Mark Ruffalo in just a Trump impression. It took me a while to put it together, but it is 100%, and they never say it, but they have made him look like Trump, and he talks like Trump, and he acts like Trump. It is very clearly a very intentional thing. The special effects are amazing. There's the alien creatures, and they're super cool, and I love that. The acting's great. This is a hard one to specifically criticize, other than to say it just didn't hit. Don't get me wrong, it's sci-fi and it has a lot of detail, and none of it holds together. And on a personal Tony level, that drives me insane. Like, none of it. It's the stuff that I see too often now, where I'm just like, well, you said this, but then this, and then but if you had that, it wouldn't do that. That's not how anything, like that kind of shit, all over the place. I really hate, with the exception of perhaps the substance, this idea where you have another you with the exact same memories and everything, and you feel no kinship to them whatsoever. You're like, fuck that guy. He's bad. I need to get him. Like, that's the only response anyone ever has in a movie. And not only do I not think that would be all the time, I don't think that would be the most common thing to happen.
Probably.
I think you would probably relate to each other extremely well on the fact of being identical. I do agree, if you're in a situation where like only one of us can live or only one of us can get the wife or whatever, that would be contentious. But the movies are always immediately like, I don't trust that guy. And just assuming all, like, he's a jerk. He's probably the kind of guy who does. No, he's the kind of guy who does exactly what you do. Because he's you. And that's the thing in the movie. The clones all have different personalities, and that's a plot point, but I'm like, that's also not how anything works.
Yeah, the conceit that they're usually using is, well, I'm the real one and you're an imposter. So yes. the source of their hate is there's only one real me.
Yeah.
And you're not it.
I also hate that, but I understand where that mindset comes from.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. But in this one, it's
number 17 and number 18. But so, yeah, I mean, I don't, but this is the thing. This is essentially how I felt about Snowpiercer. Like, such an original idea, and it was absolutely executed flawlessly. The problem is, I didn't like it.
Yeah.
The people, the story, the things that happened, and the stuff that was said, I did not enjoy or find enriching. And other people do, and that's great, and I understand why, because again, well-made films, and this is a well-made film. I don't like it. So your mileage could 100% vary on this. That's a bummer. We talked too long about the gorge, I think. I was hoping to get to it even today. But, you know, we had a lot of shit to unpack in the gorge. Gorge is a weird movie. Not happening there.
Yeah.
All right. Did you do our side quest?
Sure.
I didn't sleep very good last night. I'm not really sure why.
So my grandson says sure a lot when you say, hey, you want this or that? He goes, sure. And I was asking his parents, why does he say sure? Why doesn't he say yes or yeah? He does sometimes, but sure. And then I noticed that I say it a lot. I'm always saying sure. Yeah. I think it's me. I think I did it.
I don't talk to my niece Bucha very often. I mean, we text. But, like, voice, because she lives halfway across the country, why would I? But I used to talk to my mother a lot on the phone on a regular basis, and I talk to my sister now on a regular basis a lot. And it cracks me up when I do interact with my niece, and she uses a thing that's clearly from them. And I'm just, I want to be like, how do you know? Oh yeah, you were raised by these people. You know it the same way I know it. But it just sounds so weird coming out of her mouth. Because it's not like in general she talks the same as them, but she'll have terms of phrase that I'm like, And I mean, I got my favorite is been married, 21 years now, 21 years. The thing, the mannerisms and the turns of phrase and things that I say that now Trish also does, and vice versa, things that we came into the relationship with that now we have taken from each other. And in some cases use even more than the other one did. I don't know. Just little turns of phrase and stuff because we're so used to hearing it from the other one. So it becomes normal. And sometimes it becomes an easy shorthand because we both know what we mean by that phrase and stuff like that. So I find that fun where I hear her say something, I'm like, that's a me thing. Like Abby says, sure, you should know.
No, I'm not proud of it. I don't want to say sure all the time so much that it makes an impression on anybody. Like, why do I say that instead of some other kind of affirmation? Sure sounds so, I don't know. Doesn't it sound, I don't know. I don't like it for some reason. I have to think about
it. Well, all of the different ones carry different things. Sure to me is small town Minnesota. Sure is I am going to be ingratiating no matter what. Sure. You want that? Sure. Sure. And that is the most William ass shit right there. So that is fun.
No, no.
Trish's version of sure is very non-committal. And it'll be like, I'll be like, do you want such and such? And she's like, that's fine. That's fine. Or I guess, or thing like this. And she means yes. Like that's her version of saying yes. But I hear, well, that's not actually what I want, but I suppose I'm willing to deal with it. So I'm immediately like, well, what do you want? Let me fix it for you. And she's like, no, I said, yeah. I'm like, you didn't say yes. You said, sure, I guess, or something. You said it's fine, or like one of those. And even now, after decades of this, and I know that's what it is, it still hits me that way. And I'm just like, but we could do something else.
Yeah.
I'm
the same way with Abby. I'll say, like, that's fine or whatever. And I will admit, while I am being, it is an affirmative, and that's how it's intended to be taken. It is. For me, probably less affirmative. You know what I mean? Like, it's not an enthusiastic affirmative, but it is affirmative.
But it by no means is meant to imply.
No.
There's a different, bigger affirmative. Like, you just.
Correct.
Like, it may not be a movie you're chomping at the bit to watch, but there's no other movie you're chomping at the bit to watch, and you're perfectly happy to watch this movie.
Correct. That's correct. So I acknowledge that it's not enthusiasm. I acknowledge that, but it is affirmative. It's absolutely unambiguously affirmative. It's just not enthusiastic.
And over the years, you know, you change your communication to match what works for you guys.
Yeah, yeah.
Trish's version that she'll use sometimes now, so I'll be like, where do we go to dinner? And she'll be like, well, what do you think? And I'll be like, well, I thought about this place, and this place. And she'll say, of those three, this one is better. And that I frequently am like, well, is there somebody place else you like better? And sometimes the answer is no. And because she just hasn't thought anything, and it's the same thing. She's not super enthused, but it's fine. And she doesn't have a better answer. But sometimes I say that and she's like, well, I was thinking about this. And depending on my mood, I'll be like, yeah, let's do that then. That's great. But that's different. And so she knows now to say it different to mean that kind of thing. And
Abby and I figured some things out like that too.
We came into our relationship with such drastically different communication styles. It is one of the many reasons I sometimes am shocked we managed to stay together. but we have really managed to synthesize a new communication style that doesn't match either of our old ones, because we had to sort of meet in the middle, and we both had to learn new things. Because we came in. That's why we fought so much in the beginning. Is we, our answer to conflict and conflict resolution vis-a-vis talking, were night and day.
Yeah, I can relate to all that.
Yeah, but it's the thing that I get sort of proud about when I look and I'm like, we literally built this style of talking, and I'm kind of proud that we did that.
Yeah. All right. Nice.
Pick a number between two.
Two.
No, between. Two
and a half.
Okay. All right. I was in the car on my phone, and it was, I was doing like looking, you know, because the bifocals, but it was still not, it was a little blurry, and I was like, what? And then I realized I was wearing my old glasses because it was sunglasses and they don't have the bifocals. So apparently I'm getting used to the bifocals.
Apparently.
I don't know if we've had this one. It seems like the kind of one we had, but I couldn't swear we've had this one. Terraform your atmosphere. Tidy up or get rid of any clutter that's disrupting your peace of mind. Oh, I like that. When it said atmosphere, I was like, so the air? But no, I see what it's not just clean up clutter. It's clean up that's disrupting your peace of mind. It's hurting the atmosphere. It's clever. I like that. That's probably new. All right. Oh, my God. The little quotes are in such small print. I don't even. All right. I need it. Marie? Nope. Oh, holy crap. All right. You read it.
Me read it? I'm not going to be able to read it.
Oh, sorry. You got to read the tiny part at the bottom.
It's too small and it's really blurry. It's
come on,
not,
out of focus. Come
it's
on.
Not, it's not focusing.
Oh, God. We're old as shit here. Okay. Okay. Hold on. This is the worst thing to ever happen to me. Here's what we're going to fucking do.
What?
We're going to use our phone's flashlight so that it's lit enough so that we have to put it right up to our fucking face with a flashlight, which I keep shining at the camera. I apologize.
This is why I have magnifying glasses all over the house. I can always grab a magnifying glass. I need them often.
This is a quote from Mandy Ingber.
I
don't know who that is.
No.
Don't know if that's a real person or a fictional person.
Right. Who knows?
I will do my best to do to inhabit the character as I feel Mandy Ingber. We're always in the middle of two energies. That's the voice I feel she would have.
Oh, sure.
Gravity is sinking you down. Inspiration is pulling you up. I mean, I feel like I was very insulting to what might be a real person. So in the attempt to claw some of that back, I'm just going to say I have no comment on that quote.
Okay. A little. Yeah.
I liked the quest, though.
And yeah,
I encourage you all to do it. I think that is a good one. At first, I was like, oh, clean up. Yeah, what a brilliant original idea to make my life better. You think? But I like that, and I like the wordplay, so it's a good time. Please write in. I promise we will actually get your emails again. The gorge needs must.
Oh, no. Is that the title of the episode now?
I don't know. We already had a Gorge themed title before. I don't know if I can. Also, I'm not entirely sure what that means. The Gorge needs must. I think I really hacked up a turn of phrase there.
I think you did too, but it was pretty funny. I liked it a lot.
The greatest thing, the greatest trick the devil ever pulled was making a Gorge. Also, as the pitch meeting pointed out, Gorge is the French word for throat. which takes the whole thing in a new direction. The pitch meeting for the Gorge is quite good. I would recommend you check it out.
So yeah, we usually watch that kind of thing, but I guess we didn't even look for it.
Yeah, yeah. I don't remember if there's an honest trailer. I think there might be, but there is definitely a pitch meeting, and it is. I like it.
Okay, good.
But the opening bit is the producer being confused by the movie being called The Throat. Anyway, I'm sorry for that, but do please email themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com, and give us comments on stuff here. I at least will reply. The hat will reply. A little behind the curtain there. Or you can comment on YouTube. I'll also find out about that. I get notifications there, and usually the hat will say something back. Also, follow us on Blue Sky at Magical Talking Hat, not The Magical Talking Hat, .bsky.social. And at this point, we're just announcing when we have episodes there, but if people actually follow, maybe the hat will say funny things. Who knows? And in the meantime, better the Gorge you know than two in the bush.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.